When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the Billboard Sharpie Podcast. Gary Trust here in New York, and really excited for this week's guests. I think they're going to appreciate this. They study trends. I think you guys will like this trend. You're the first repeat guests ever on the podcast. How's that for a trend?
It's awesome.
Great to be here, Gary.
Absolutely. Dave Penn.
Yep.
Yael Penn.
Yes.
Of Hit Songs Deconstructed. You guys were on the podcast back in April, I think, and it was just a complete class on songwriting trends. I feel like I learned so much the first time you guys were here.
We loved it. It's great to be back.
So welcome back. We're going to talk about more trends that you guys are studying constantly through Hit Songs Deconstructed, and we are going to deconstruct as well. While we're here, you guys are. I'm going to listen and learn.
Absolutely.
So we'll talk about The Chainsmokers, Don't Let Me Down, Meghan Trainor's No, and a classic, too, that Bittersweet Reasons, obviously, came back this year as a hit again, Prince's When Doves Cry.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into, for anyone who maybe didn't hear the first podcast with you guys, just remind everyone what the Hit Songs Deconstructed is and really what an interesting tool it is for music fans and people in the business.
Okay, great. Absolutely. So Hit Songs Deconstructed provides the music industry with data and analysis on the current state of the mainstream music scene, but at the compositional level. So we track the compositional characteristics and production techniques in the songs that land in the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100. So one thing that's important to note is that each song that we deconstruct, it's meticulously deconstructed by a Hit Songs Deconstructed analyst. We do not use computer-generated algorithms. We do it the old-fashioned way, by listening.
Right, we talked about that last time. You guys have a room, or rooms full of people.
Lots of listening.
Headphones, right? Lots of headphones.
Lots of listening. Yes. So because of all of that listening and the in-depth deconstructions, we are able to offer in-depth reports, which you're very familiar with, which take a deep dive into the latest hit songwriting and production techniques, characteristics, and trends through a combination of data and in-depth analysis. So we're also very excited to announce the launch of our Immersion searchable database, which contains data on all of the songs that land in the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100 going back several years. It offers over 200 searchable criteria, enabling highly customizable searches based on the compositional characteristics, production techniques, and so much more. Plus, every song that's housed in the database includes a one-page deconstruction, which details key compositional characteristics.
Yeah, this is what's got you guys on our radar here at Billboard. Is we're always studying trends of the music business, sales, different kinds, but this is really the only tool we've seen that studies the actual music itself on such a deep level, and that's why you guys seem so interesting to us here at Billboard.
Yeah, it's understanding the what, the how, and the why behind what makes these hits so successful.
All right, so immersion is the new part of what you guys do.
Yes. So so it's a searchable database. It's extremely robust. And not only is it a huge time saver for anybody who needs to look up anything related to songs on the compositional level or looking up production techniques, but it's also a great discovery tool. So, for example, one interesting trend that we pulled from our immersion database is the increase in prominence of male-female duets among the top 10. It's a trend that's been occurring for several years. So in 2014, 12% of the songs that landed in the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100 were male-female duets. In 2015, it went up to 15%. And so far this year, it's already up to 19%.
Ah.
However, what's even more interesting is the fact that from the 6 new songs that entered the top 10 for the first time this year and reached number 1, which is Panda, Work, Pillow Talk, One Dance, Can't Stop the Feeling, and Cheap Thrills, 3 of those were male-female duets. So that's 50% of those songs. Now, these 3 songs also possess a dancehall subgenre influence, which is another trend that we are seeing evolve, similar to the same way trap did. So in 2013, 3% of songs had a trap subgenre influence. Examples are Harlem Shake and Started From the Bottom. In 2014, it went up to 15% of songs. Examples are Dark Horse and Turn Down for What. In 2015, it went up to 27%. Examples are Trap Queen and Bad Blood featuring Kendrick Lamar. And now in 2016, we're seeing it plateau at 26% so far this year.
Which is still a lot. Higher,
yeah,
right.
Absolutely. It just hasn't gone up yet from 2015. It's just the same. And some examples are Same Old Love and Panda. So we're seeing a similar progression for dancehall subgenre influence, along with reggae and tropical, all of which are very closely related. So in 2014, the trend began with 3% of songs. Examples are Am I Wrong and Rude. In 2015, it went up to 9% of songs. Examples are Cheerleader and What Do You Mean? And so far this year, it's up to 17% of songs. And examples are Work and One Dance and Cheap Thrills, all of which are number one hits.
Right.
So when you look at the 6 new songs that entered the top 10 for the first time in 2016 and reached number one, 50% are male-female duets, the other 50% are solo male, 50% were released by RCA, 2/3 of the songs include a post-chorus, and 50% of them have a dancehall subgenre influence.
And that dancehall influence is just perfectly primed for the summer.
Right.
So it's got that really infectious groove. It's kind of cool, mellow kind of vibe, tropical. It's just perfectly primed for a hit of the summer.
The whole Bieber comeback has really been based on a lot of that stuff.
Very tropical. You know, especially, you know, What Do You Mean? I mean, we did a deconstruction of that song.
Right.
Really infectious groove that just really delivered it and delivered in a very unique manner as well, which was great.
And it was seen maybe by some people as a little bit of a risk when Rihanna came back with Work. Because on first listen, that was like, that's not a very mainstream sounding pop song.
No, very different than her previous works. No pun intended.
We like puns.
But, you know, she... You know, it certainly seemed less commercial than her other stuff, but, you know, that groove and the repetition of work, 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 work,
right.
I mean, it's just such an infectious song that you can't get out of your head, coupled with the Rihanna hit factor. I mean, she's just so popular,
you
can't go wrong. But it was great to see her really pushing the boundaries of what she's done before.
And Drake, obviously.
Drake,
these huge number ones. Yeah, bring that sound.
Oh, absolutely. Well, One Dance, I mean... Have you determined your number one hit of the summer yet? I would imagine he's in very close contention, or the contention.
Yeah. It's been One Dance has been number one since the beginning of the summer.
Yep.
So it's a running tally. So every week it just sort of keeps adding to its lead.
Yeah.
The one song that's really jumped up the highest since, although it may be tough for it to knock One Dance off, is Cheap Thrills.
Yeah, which also has that whole dancehall tropical kind of vibe as well.
And that was actually originally intended to be recorded by Rihanna.
Absolutely.
So it's a Sia song.
So it's all tied together.
Yeah, it's almost like another Rihanna song.
It's great to see Sia, you know, at the top of the charts, you know, who's been the secret weapon behind, you know, many hits.
Right.
So she's doing really well. It's great to see.
And it's interesting, too, you mentioned RCA as three of the six newly released number ones this year. And they're sort of all coming from different places. The Sia is on that reggae tropical vibe. You've got the Zayn song Pillow Talk, which is your boy band ballad. And then Justin Timberlake. We had Joe Riccatelli from RCA on the podcast a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
And he was saying how some of the songs Timberlake has released, especially since 2013, they've been a little more R&B. They've kind of had some different sounds.
Michael Jackson influence.
The Michael Jackson
very
influence.
Very big Michael Jackson influence. Getting that disco vibe going.
Right. Know? Apparently, when Justin was talking to Joe after he'd played him Can't Stop the Feeling, he said, this is finally, I'm just giving you a straight pop song. This is the easiest song you'll ever have to promote. I wanted to make it easy for you on this one.
Well, certainly did.
Yep. Wow. So just, you know, in a few minutes here, you guys have kind of broken down trends of hit music in the last 3 years and how we've come to this point right now in 2016.
A lot of interesting stuff when you look into it. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what, for anyone that really, who is really your target client for what hit songs deconstructed is? Is it just the music fan listening now like me who thinks, wow, that's really interesting? But it's obviously people crafting this music and working on different ways.
Primarily, I would say it's for people very serious about you know, making a career in the music industry. We have anywhere from hit songwriters who subscribe to novice songwriters who are really serious about developing their craft, producers, engineers, a lot of A&Rs because they want to stay on top of what's happening, where their eyes and ears for what's going on a lot of times. They don't have a lot of time to really, you know, peek out and see what's going everywhere. So we report on all the compositional characteristics in addition to the sales, which you report on in the streams and, you know, what makes them successful like that. There's just so much to learn from this. So there's really something in it for everybody, but it's really the serious music professional who wants to make a career in the industry. Because you need to be in tune with the current trends, and you need to understand what makes these songs so successful. So you get all these techniques and characteristics ingrained in your head so it becomes intuitive of how you're going to craft a song for maximum impact. And that's the key commonality that most hit songwriters share. If you look like a Max Martin or a Shellback, or Benny and all these other people, they're masters at their craft because they work at it.
Right.
You know, it's a lot of hard work. But you know what? If music's in your blood and this is what you love doing, it doesn't seem like work.
Right.
It's fun. Like, we love what we do. It's just, you know, because I'm a songwriter as well, you know, and produce. So it's really, you know, you're learning something new every single day. Every single time a new song lands in the Hot 100 Top 10, there's something new to discover. And that's what's fantastic about it.
And it's not only for songwriting decisions. I mean, I think that it's also for business decisions. You know, a label may use Hit Songs Deconstructed to think about which single maybe they should be releasing.
At a specific time.
You know, so it's not just about the songwriting, it's also about the business. And that's why it's really for any music industry professional.
Well, I think it really all just comes down to, you know, as Yael was saying, it's decision making. It's songwriting decision making, it's producing decision making, engineering, A&Ring. Whatever you're doing in today's music industry, you're making decisions. And this is another tool to really help you make informed decisions about what to do.
Is it sort of amazing that this type of tool didn't exist previously?
Well, if you think about it, it has existed for everything else other than looking at the actual song.
Right.
And so the tool, as the concept of the tool, exists in every industry, including the music industry, when you're looking at, you know, other things like sales, et cetera. But what didn't exist was the you know, looking at the actual song the same way as you look at all of the other things. And that's why Hit Songs Deconstructed really complements all of the other tools that are out there right now.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget, it all starts and ends with the song.
Right.
And I think a lot of people might have forgotten about that. You know, you have, you know, it's all about marketing your song and great site design and networking and great plugins and DAWs sound libraries and all this stuff. But it doesn't mean anything unless you have the song. So start with the song and everything else can be determined afterwards. And that's why we just focus strictly on the song.
You guys are the sabermetricians of music. It's the way sports analysis has totally transformed. That's what you guys are doing with music.
It's really interesting. I mean, there's just so much to discover. It's just, you know, like I said, every week learning something new. So, and then we do the work for people, and then we convey it to them what we're finding with the trends, with the techniques. And the more you know, the more effective you are.
That brings me to one of the questions, some of the feedback I got from the first time you guys were on, is how much of songwriting is actively thinking, I need to employ some of these types of songwriting elements, and how much of it is just inspiration? And maybe is it a combination? The more you have hit songs and this is your craft, it becomes more intuitive.
I would say it's 50-50.
Yeah.
You know, you need that inspiration, because if you don't have the inspiration, you have nothing to craft. But after you develop that hook, and, you know, that hook hits you, or, so, you know, the lyric hits you, the title, whatever it is, what next? What do you do? Where do you go with it? And the more you study the hits, the more, you know, you learn about the techniques and the characteristics, it becomes intuitive of, like, it's a toolbox of where are we going to go with this. So who is my target audience? Who is the artist that I might be pitching this towards? What genre should it be in? Should it be dance, electronic, hip-hop, a synthesis of the two? How do I fuse sub-genres? There's so many decisions that need to be made, and it's not necessarily sitting down and saying, you know, doing a calculation of, well, this percent of that percent. It's right. Not that. It's as, and this is what I think our subscribers have in common, is when they read these reports and they really absorb what's going on, like you just said, it becomes intuitive of what to do. So you get that inspiration, you get that hook, you get something, and then you mold it into what it is. But it needs to be an informed decision. Otherwise, it's just a hobby. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
You know, there are millions of hobbyist musicians all over the place. But if you want to be a contender in the mainstream music scene and you want to write hits, they have certain qualities, and that's what we report on.
And one thing that's I think interesting is how the reports and immersion complement each other, because the reports, they're a learning tool, right? So much that they're being used in universities such as Berklee College of Music. So they're a real learning tool where you can study one song over the course of a long time because they're so in-depth, or you can review our trend report or our genre report or our top 10 deconstructed, which focuses more on the techniques. And then immersion is more of a research tool and a discovery tool. So you're not studying, you're actually researching. So, you know, it can be used in so many different ways. So, for example, let's say, you know, you need to compose for an ad, you know, and the agency says, all right, here's a track. I want it to sound similar to this. You can look that up, and then you can see every single characteristic about it, and you can drill down and find every other song that has each of those characteristics and just get inspiration and an understanding of how you can compose something that's going to sound similar, but yet there won't be any copyright infringement.
Right. See, and that's a great point that you brought up, of where Hit Songs Deconstructed can be used for sound-alikes, you know, molding a song in the vein of something. And a lot of people, since the beginning, you know, one of the reservations that people initially had is that you're just having everybody sound cookie-cutter.
Right.
It's the same techniques, and it's anything but. You know, they have to deliver the unique inspiration themselves. We can't teach unique inspiration, but we could teach how to channel that unique inspiration in the most effective manner possible. But when you really get into the top 10 of the Hot 100, it's anything but cookie cutter. I mean, there's a lot of unique qualities. And when you study the hits, you really find out that there's a unique spin, which is equally as important as the core craft itself.
And one of the things we'll get into as we analyze the three songs we talked about is how so many pop hits nowadays are really complex. I mean, I know pop music is meant to be something you can, the more mass appeal it is, the easier it is to process in your ears and in your brain. But there's a lot going on in a lot of pop hits lately.
But that's the brilliance of the whole thing.
Right.
When you dig down deep, you see how meticulously and well-crafted they are and how complex they really are. But the true brilliance is making them come across in a very simplistic, easy-to-digest manner so they connect with the widest possible audience, blending a combination of familiarity and originality. And that's the real brilliance of what it, you know, these hits embrace.
I know you started Hit Songs Deconstructed. Dave, you were a songwriter, you said last time. Have you learned more in your... Do you still have time? Last time you said you don't even have time to do it.
It's funny how it all works out. You never know what direction you're going to go in life.
Right.
No, but in the future, definitely looking back to get into songwriting and producing, and I've learned so much from doing this along, you know, with our staff, and I'm just really looking forward to, you know, getting back into that home realm. I miss it. But there's only so many hours in the day.
Right. Yael, I think you said you learned piano when you were very young.
Yes.
Haven't had time to get back, have
piano
you?
And cello were my instruments. Cello, I do not play anymore.
There's no room in an apartment. So, yeah.
We do have a piano, though, so I do play the piano whenever I have some time.
Have you been asked to speak at any schools, or is that something in your future that you won't have time for?
But
we've
have spoken, you?
Yeah,
we've
done a couple of presentations
at
Berkeley.
Yeah,
SAE we've done, and we're talking to some other schools now that want us to talk. So yeah, it's been really exciting. Really exciting.
Yes. Speaking engagements will come up soon. We just needed to launch this database first.
And we also have a lot of workshops planned as well,
which
is going to be great. We've done workshops in the past, and that's when we can really just do a deep dive to all these different techniques and really take the audience A to Z of what makes a hit song a hit and how they could apply it to themselves while staying true to their own unique characteristics. So,
we're
excited. Those
will be coming up in the fall.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Great. I don't know when you guys will have time for that, but apparently,
I don't know either.
Apparently, you'll make time.
We will see.
We will make it happen.
Well, I remember last time you were here, you analyzed Selena Gomez, Same Old Love, Drake, Hotline Bling, and it just became a masterclass in how these songs. What drew people into them? Because you really drilled down into where the actual hooks were and the thinking behind them.
Yeah.
So
and then Adele, that we concluded with very briefly, and how that song didn't need all the bells and whistles. It didn't need all these interesting twists and turns because it was just Adele's vocal that really, and the evocative characteristics of the song that really put it over the top.
Right.
So it's really, you know, it's knowing when to employ certain characteristics and when not to employ. That's the bottom line.
And then the three songs today are much more complex than Hello that we're going to talk about. And at this point, Dave, I'm just going to really turn it over to you. You're the professor. So kick us off. Get us into three of these big hits. One of them was a hit in the 80s and came back this year. So whichever one you want to start with, Dave, you start teaching. We'll listen.
Absolutely.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So there are three key criteria that we look for when selecting a song for deconstruction. It has to be a song that recently charted in the top 10 of the Hot 100. There needs to be a wealth of hit songwriting and production characteristics and techniques from which to learn. And whenever possible, it needs to be different than our other deconstructions in order to provide a good cross-section of hits. We're always looking for new, innovative songs to focus on. And all three of our most recent deconstructions meet these criteria. Prince's When Doves Cry, Meghan Trainor's No, and The Chainsmokers' Don't Let Me Down. So let's do a brief overview of each, and then we'll get into some of the specifics that makes them so strong. So let's start with When Doves Cry. And this song briefly re-entered the top 10 for the first time since 1984, right. I believe,
yep.
Following Prince's untimely passing. Very tragic. And I think it was also a number one Hot 100 hit back in the day.
It was number one for 5 weeks in 1984, came back into the top 10. It was big on our R&B charts, on our rock charts, showing. I'm sure this is what
cross-genre pollination.
Absolutely. Prince is kind of his own category.
Yeah, very hard to pigeonhole Prince into a specific genre.
Right.
So it was the first time that I heard When Doves Cry in a very long time. And as I was listening to it, not only did I reconnect with the song and realize, you know, remember how much I loved it, but I also realized through a few listens that there was just so much to learn from this song. And, you know, Prince being the master craftsman that he was. So since it met Hit Songs Deconstructed criteria for what is, you know, can be classified as deconstruction, it was current again. So it was a no-brainer to feature it. I'm so glad that we did. What a lot of people might not know is that not only did Prince write the song himself, but he also played all the instruments himself, which is quite a rarity when you think about it. You don't really see that too often. And it was written for a specific scene in the Purple Rain movie. But one of its real core strengths is that it was very much in tune with the sounds and the trends of the day, which gave it mass appeal. But it also possessed very unique qualities, which can be aptly described as like the Prince factor, that enabled it to stand out amongst its contemporaries. And it's this effective blending of familiarity and originality that's a hallmark of many hits, both yesterday and today.
So basically a key point for hits is having an element that sounds like a hit, but also applying your own uniqueness and talents to
absolutely
make it stand out.
You want to very easily connect with an audience, but it needs a unique spin so it stands out. And that's a characteristic that many of the songs that we find charting in the, you know, Hot 100 Top 10 today certainly possess.
Right.
The next song is Meghan Trainor's No, which was the lead single from her most recent album entitled Thank You. And it was written by Meghan Trainor, Ricky Reed, and Jacob Casher. And interestingly, it was a result of the label's insistence that the album needed a single, and what Trainor delivered so far didn't fit the bill. So here's a case where going back to the drawing board really yielded great results. But one of, you know, that song's real strengths is that it both connects with Trainor's All About That Bass core fan base, you know, who love her for that retro 60s soul doo-wop vibe, and charts new territory as well with the late 90s, early 2000s pop, dance, and R&B influences a la Britney Spears, NSYNC, and Destiny's Child. But equally as important, it contains a really strong hook at its core, which is the na to the ah to the no, no, no hook, which is reinforced in every stanza of every section except for the pre-chorus. Pre-chorus just provides that build into the chorus, which culminates with na to the ah to the no, no, no. But it's really a meticulously well-structured song with so much to learn from. And the final song is Don't Let Me Down, which is a very successful recent single from the Chainsmokers and features evocative vocals from, do you pronounce it Daya or Daya?
Daya.
I've heard it. It is Daya. Okay.
I taught hip songs deconstructed
something.
I've
heard it both ways. I don't analyze names yet. So. And she's just 17 years old.
Right.
So she's off to a really good start in her career. Great voice. So in contrast to When Doves Cry, and No, for that matter, it's very much in tune with the sounds of the day. It features an engaging blend of electropop, EDM, and trap influences. But it also features non-typical influence as well. For example, like the alternative influence, which is put into effect by the qualities of the electric guitar. And this is a characteristic that really helps it stand out, especially in the dance club electronic genre, somewhat of an atypical characteristic. But like the other songs, it's meticulously well-crafted, you know, contains multiple instrumental and vocal hooks, and engaging energy level variations, an effective intro, universal lyrics, to name a few of many.
Yeah, we've been talking at Billboard, Dave, how this year the only two so far multi-member acts, duos or groups this year with at least three Hot 100 top tens this year are the Chainsmokers and 21 Pilots, which, you know, maybe a year ago people wouldn't have seen that coming from either act. But I think there's probably a similarity there in that you're just saying how the Chainsmokers, you think of them as dance pop, but you're talking about electric guitars and similarly 21
very
Pilots.
Left of center qualities, you know, very interesting blend of different subgenres that give the song a very unique sound while remaining familiar. That's a perfect example, where, you know, that unique spin and familiarity.
And same for 21 Pilots, where they're mixing rock and some rap elements.
Absolutely.
So a lot of blending.
Yeah, but you get that cross-genre pollination that's not only great for the song, but it's also great for the sales potential as well, because that's the bottom line for the labels, and also the artist wants to make money. So you get into all these different genres, and you reach a wider audience, which ultimately makes the song more successful.
It could go wrong, right, in that you could just throw so much into a song that it's just one big mess?
That's where craft comes into play, knowing how much, how to balance it. Does it sound right? And the more you listen to hits and you see how they're structured, you realize, am I leaning too much in one direction? But again, it becomes intuitive the more that you do it. But you're 100% right.
Right.
You know, if you're too over the place and it just becomes this massive collage of stuff, you know, then it might not connect with anybody.
I feel like a lot of pop songs have added more hooks to them. It maybe goes back to when I think noticed it was on Bastille's Pompeii. There's like seven different hooks in that song.
Oh, yeah.
It just seems like that's a new model for writing hits.
Well,
just
different vocal hooks in that song and everything. Absolutely. Well, and that's one of the things that we're actually going to talk about today with post-choruses. So so today we're going to look at two compositional characteristics, which are, you know, key components in many of the songs that land within the Hot 100 Top 10. And we're going to be using our three most recent deconstructions as examples. The first is clever and effective intros, and the second is post-chorus payoffs.
Okay.
More hooks, the better.
Right.
So let's start with intros, though. So the manner in which a song begins is of the utmost importance. You know, the listener needs to be hooked in as quickly as possible, and their attention needs to be held until the next section takes over, which is typically the verse or the chorus. So for this reason, the rule of thumb is to keep an intro as short as possible. You know, hook the listener in ASAP and just get on with it.
Right.
And the average intro length of a top 10 hit during the last four quarters was just 12 seconds, with over 90% landing at 19 seconds or less. And Don't Let Me Down's intro lands right at the average. It's 12 seconds. However, there were exceptions, and there always are. And No and When Doves Cry are two of the most notable. But as you'll see, despite their long length, they're exceptionally effective. And as the saying goes, you need to know the rules to break the rules. And that's where effective song craft, again, comes into play. So let's start with Don't Let Me Down. As I mentioned, its intro is 12 seconds long, which is in line with the average. And there are a couple of qualities that really make it very effective. It establishes one of the song's two primary instrumental hooks, which is that electric guitar pattern. And it establishes two of the song's subgenres, alternative through the qualities of the electric guitar, and also electropop through the synths and affected drums. So it's the electric guitar, though, that's really the standout instrument in the mix. And it's an instrument that you don't hear being used that often in the intro of a top 10 hit, especially, again, in the dance club electronic genre. It's usually synth-dominated. But what's really interesting is that the electric guitar and corresponding hook and alternative influence that it puts into effect is actually removed from the entire second half of the song. Instead, trap, electropop, and dance play the dominant role. And this is something that you also don't see too often in a hit, where a major, memorable component of a song is completely removed. But it certainly, you know, didn't mitigate the effectiveness of the song.
Right.
So the next one is Meghan Trainor's No. And No's intro is double the length of the average, landing at 24 seconds, which is pretty lengthy by mainstream standards. But it features a really clever, evolving two-part structure, both of which possess a distinct characteristic. As a result, the listener is easily kept engaged despite its relatively long length. So the first seven bars of Noah's intro essentially pick up where Trina left off with her two previous hits, Lips Are Movin' and especially All About That Bass, both of which possess a 1960s retro soul doo-wop quality. So this instantly attracts and engages her core audience, who love her for that particular vibe due to the familiarity imparted, and the listener is also inclined to think at this point that No will be in the same style as her other hits. But as we know, it's anything but the case. There's a big surprise to come.
I think it's so cute, and I think it's so sweet, how you let your friends encourage you to try and talk to me.
Now in bar 8, everything changes. So following a prolonged transitional lull, which creates a high degree of tension and anticipation for what comes next, the intro abruptly and unexpectedly shifts into late 90s, early 2000s pop and R&B mode through the qualities of the song-defining nah to the ah to the no, no, no vocal hook.
Before you speak,
so it's the effective combination of the 1960s retro soul doo-wop and late 90s, early 2000s electropop dance and R&B influences that cleverly embraces Trainor's past and signals a new, more contemporary direction for the artist. And it also introduces the song's primary nod to the ah to the no, no, no vocal hook. So again, while relatively lengthy, the intro achieves a lot and easily keeps the listener engaged until the ensuing chorus seals the deal. And now we get to the intro of intros, When Doves Cry. And its intro is triple the length of the average, landing at a very lengthy 33 seconds.
Yeah.
But Prince, being the eclectic master craftsman that he was, structured it in an exceptionally infectious, engaging, and memorable manner. It features an evolving four-part structure, each of which possesses a distinct characteristic and seamlessly flows from one into the other. So part one. Part one is just 3 seconds long, and is one of the most recognizable parts of the entire song. So that shredding electric guitar, as brief as it is, functions as a really strong, unique identifier for the song. The second you hear it, there's no mistaking When Doves Cry for something else. And also, similar to Don't Let Me Down and No, it functions in the matter of like a genre fake-out. You think the song is going to head in one particular direction, in this case hard rock, but it turns out to be anything but. And interestingly, after the intro, the guitar and hard rock vibe play absolutely no role in the song. So next segment is part two, and part two clocks in at 10 seconds. It features continued guitar shredding from part one, and also puts the song into motion by introducing the core of the infectious drum hook that remains in effect throughout the entire song. So while the guitar shredding keeps the hard rock vibe that was established in part one in play, the electronic and flange-affected drums introduce a funky pop groove element into the mix. Now, part three that follows is half the length of part two, clocking at just 5 seconds. So with the drums from part two remaining in effect, Prince's shredding shifts to raw, abrasive strumming, coupled with the addition of the equally abrasive and repetitive vocal effect, which takes center stage in the mix. So as a result, the hard rock vibe of the song is diminished, the left of center pop funk vibe remains in effect, and a new avant-garde twist is introduced. So at this point, there's really no indication of where the song is going to head next. And now we get to part four, which is the last segment of the intro and also the longest, and with good reason. Clocking at 15 seconds, it introduces the listener to the song's primary instrumental hook. So this synth hook, along with the characteristics of the drums, shifts the vibe from grooving avant-garde to full-on electropop dance mode. So now looking back, the listener was taken on a really engaging ride through four distinct genres, which cleverly progresses from heavy to light. Shredding guitar hard rock, to hard rock with a pop-funk groove, to pop-funk groove with an avant-garde twist, and finally electropop dance coupled with the song's primary instrumental hook. That's how Prince, that's why Prince is such a master craftsman. You know, left of center, familiar, engaging, solid intro at 33 seconds, which is totally atypical.
So, I just love how it took about 5 minutes to go over 33 seconds of music, because that's how
it
deep
could have
you
been
guys
longer.
Go.
There's a lot.
But no, that's a great point, too, just how many sounds Prince was mixing and how it really ties into today's music, which is a lot of these hits are doing the same thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, what's really interesting, though, is that almost 30 years later, there was another mega hit that featured essentially the same atypical intro structure as When Doves Cry, and that was Macklemore and Lewis's Thrift Shop, which was released back in 2012. So while at face value, one might think that they don't have anything in common, but when you look under the hood, you see that there are distinct structural similarities, which enable them to remain very effective despite their long length, both at 33 seconds long and possess an evolving four-part structure.
Right.
So part one of Thrift Shop's intro, just like When Doves Cry, 3 seconds long and features a one-time-only unique identifier element. Instead of the shredding electric guitar riff, here we have a vocal from a child.
Hey, Macklemore, can we go thrift shopping?
Not only does it possess a unique quality, but it also plugs the artist and the song title as well, so it's very clever. Part two, just like When Doves Cry, the second segment is right around 10 seconds long and introduces the drum groove that puts the song into motion. The other new element introduced is the repetitive what-what vocal. Now, although part three is longer than part three in When Doves Cry, clocking at 10 seconds as opposed to 5, it features a similar overall characteristic. So with the drum groove of the preceding segment remaining in effect, a new vocal is introduced into the mix, which has a repetitive, nonsense, left-of-center quality. And this provides the section with another infectious, engaging characteristic similar to the abrasive avant-garde vocal that enters during part three of When Doves Cry. Now, part four, although shorter than part four in When Doves Cry, has the same overall function. So the vocal from part three remaining in effect, the drum groove kicks into high gear, coupled with the introduction of the sax, which delivers the song's primary instrumental hook, just as the synth pattern does in When Doves Cry. And to further seal the deal with the listener, the song then heads into the chorus. Oh. So When Doves Cry and Thrift Shop both feature intros that are atypical of most mainstream hits, especially due to their length, but the similar effective manner in which they're structured really helped to prime each for success 30 years apart.
Right. So it's interesting, too, when you talk about long intros. Like, I come from radio background. Mm. I know there have been songs in recent years where they've even been released, and then radio stations have gone back to a label saying, we don't want this long intro. We want to start right with the hook, and songs have been re-edited to start with the hook so that short attention span for listeners, they can just get right into it. Songs like that would seem to suggest that they're so strong just on what they are that they don't need that intro being cut out. People want to hear that.
It's all the manner in which you structure it. Right. So you can go against the norm. You can have a 33-second intro. It's not recommended, but if you do, there are certain ways to structure it so that the listener is kept engaged so that there's no chance of them tuning out. Because a lot of times if you have a very repetitive intro that just goes over and over, they might get bored and just switch to something else. Right. They're not going to stick around to hear what the verse or especially the chorus is. So.
And you bring up the point, too, of how both When Doves Cry and Thrift Shop have a real build to them. They start with something very simple, and layers are added.
Yeah, very engaging. So the next thing that we're going to take a look at here is post-chorus payoff. So first, what is a post-chorus? So in a nutshell, a post-chorus is a section that directly follows the chorus and features a vocal and or instrumental hook at its core. And in 2014 and 2015, just for example, 49% of all Hot 100 Top 10 hits featured a post-chorus in their framework. However, we're only half of the way through 2016, already 60% feature a post-chorus in their framework. Recent notable examples include Cake by the Ocean, My House, I Took a Pill in Ibiza, and When Doves Cry and Don't Let Me Down. Now, in some cases, it's actually the post-chorus that functions as the song's primary sectional payoff, meaning it's arguably the most infectious, engaging, and memorable part of the song, as opposed to the chorus, as one would typically expect. And this is the case both with When Doves Cry and Don't Let Me Down. So let's first take a look at When Doves Cry. While the song's chorus features the summation of the narrative, which is the key component of the chorus, there aren't any really standout hooks, and Prince's vocal and the accompaniment characteristics remain relatively on par with the preceding verse. Otherwise stated, it's a pretty linear sectional progression, and the chorus isn't really standing out compared to the verse that precedes it. But that's where the instrumental break post-chorus really comes into play. So the last line of the chorus, this is what it sounds like when doves cry, lyrically sets up the post-chorus that follows. It features the infectious synth hook that was initially introduced at the end of the intro at its core and launches the song back into electropop dance mode. But equally as important is that it also features Prince's melismatic wails, which is his unique interpretation of what it sounds like when doves cry. This provides the section and the song with an exceptionally left-of-center spin while also giving Prince the opportunity to really show off his vocal chops. Scream at each other.
Yeah, I never even thought that. He's literally saying
this. He's really conveying this is what it sounds like when those. So you have that lyrical lead in, and there's also anticipation from the taste of the listener got of that hook at the end of the intro. They're waiting for that to come back, and here it is functioning as the primary payoff within the song, not the chorus. So again, Prince, the master eclectic craftsman.
Right.
Now, Don't Let Me Down. Its chorus, When Doves Cry, provides the summation of the narrative, but it doesn't function as the song's primary sectional payoff. Instead, the chorus provides an excitement, tension, and anticipation build that reaches an apex at the end of the section, effectively setting up the release into the hook-laden instrumental break post-chorus that follows. So let's pick it up in the second half of the chorus. It's in my head, darling, I hope that you'll be here when I need you the most. So you can hear how the tension, the excitement level really builds to a climax. At the end of the section, the kick drum thins out via an EQ shift, and there's a brief partial accompaniment pull that maximizes the impact of the post-chorus when the sub-bass hits at the onset of the section. So now let's get into the post-chorus. At its core, it features the infectious nasal-sounding synth hook, coupled with two distinct versions of the song title vocal hook, Don't Let Me Down and Don't Let Me Down, Down, Down. And the second one is clever in the sense that it melodically jibes with the connotation of the lyrics, down, 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 due to its descending pitch. Additionally, the post-chorus also provides a pronounced genre and vibe shift, launching the song into a heavy, slow-burning trap influence groove that's driven by prominent sub-bass. So as you can see, the post-chorus really takes the impact of both When Doves Cry and Don't Let Me Down to a heightened level by providing the primary payoff following the summation of the narrative in the chorus. So those are two great examples of really effective post-choruses. And as you said, more hooks.
Yeah,
so,
that's another one of those songs where it's always like, what is the hook to Don't Let Me Down? Is it the I need you right now? There's so many different
parts.
There
are a lot of hooks. And, the song title is repeated many times throughout the song, but it's always conveyed in a unique manner because it's tied into different sub-hooks.
Right.
So it's just, it's hook maximization. And that's another thing that a lot of hits have in common. It's, and that's like the hallmark of like a Max Martin pen song. It's every section of the song has to be infectious, engaging, and memorable.
And the more hits he writes, 60 or so top 10 hits now in the last 20 years, the more that becomes the structure of what a pop hit is nowadays. And other songwriters are obviously paying attention to that. And
yeah, he's certainly a driving force in the industry.
Right.
But effective songcraft. But he always puts, you know, unique different spins on the songs, you know, and also with the teams that he assembles. You know, keep, you know, it's all about hit songwriting teams today. It's really not a solo effort. You know, where Prince, solo efforts, you know, a lot of songs have 5, 10, 15, 20 songwriters. It's
I'll bring up 21 Pilots again. They were their three top 10 hits now they've had this year, all written by Tyler Joseph.
Tyler Joseph,
they really are the outliers at this point in
absolutely
in songwriting. But again, at the same time, he's writing these complex songs, but it is just one person.
Yep, absolutely.
Wow. So another lesson here from the masters, hit songs deconstructed. There's just no one else doing this kind of analysis for songs and breaking down songs literally at such an organic level and looking at it 10 seconds at a time and talking about it that way for minutes and what went into it. And I guess it really goes back to, Dave, you saying it's deep craft and it's making it seem like it's very simple.
Absolutely. And it's really, you know, understanding what makes, you know, the familiar work, what makes the unique work, how these all come together in shaping today's hits.
So you talk about these three songs in particular, if there are, whether it's labels or songwriters or producers listening in this case specifically, I guess one of the big takeaways would be melding of different sounds. There's a lot of rock and dance and pop going on in
all these
fusion. Songs, right?
Yeah, we have a whole report dedicated just to subgenres and genres, you know, fusing them in a meticulously well-mannered, you know, manner to really maximize, you know, cross appeal, but also to, you know, provide the song with a very unique spin, you know, push the boundaries of what's been done before.
Yeah, do you think as music listeners we're becoming more sophisticated? If you know, it's not just three chords and one simple. There's so many more layers now of music as we get into, you know, 50 years of the rock era and beyond. Do we just keep adding more complexity to pop music?
I think there are a lot more tools to play with now, a lot more toys.
Right.
I mean, technology has changed everything, I think.
You know, but also keep in mind, you know, there's always the game changers that come around, like when, you know, Nirvana came around and brought an end to, you know, it didn't seem like there's going to be any end to the hair metal bands with Bon Jovi and Rat, and all of a sudden grunge comes in, three chords, heavy stuff, and you'd never think that would be the most popular thing and totally, you know, turn culture on its head.
Right.
But it did. So now you could have a lot of toys being employed and a lot of different sounds and layers and genres. And all of a sudden, tomorrow, maybe, you know, some kid who's playing around in his bedroom with, you know, different, you know, guitars and everything, and she's like, I don't need any of this stuff. I'm just going to go back to three-chord, minimalist kind of stuff, and boom, you have a new trend.
Right.
So you never know.
Shawn Mendes' Stitches was just kind of a campfire acoustic song.
Absolutely.
For the most part. But a lot of it, too, exactly, goes back to people growing up now with laptops. They've learned to create music that way, and there are just fewer genre boundaries than there used to be. People just grow up with, whether it's the iTunes store or YouTube, music is just in one place. You don't have to just listen to one station that plays a certain type of music. It's all there, right?
Yeah.
Blurred lines, I always say, is the nice pun. Easy way to say what music has become, but that's kind of what's happened.
Absolutely. But you really have to have the song craft to know how to put it all together. And that's what hit songwriters have in common. They know, you know, they have the toys, they have the tools. Now what do we do with it? And they know how to put it all together. So just because you have all the sounds and everything else doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to write a hit. So that's why song craft is still so important, despite, you know, how it's getting, you know, easier to, you know, record at home and, you know, GarageBand and all these other things. You know, the craft still prevails.
And all these songs for all the different elements, we're still talking about the hooks. There's that talent that you either have or you don't have is to write the actual melody at all.
Yes.
The base of all this is the actual the melody.
Melody is important.
Right?
And without a great melody, nobody's going to stick around to listen to what your lyrics are. You know, so it's all in my opinion, it's all melody-based. Got to leave that resonating in your head.
Well, lessons, as always, you guys are two for two and just leaving me overwhelmed with learning things I just didn't realize. I was listening to, when you listen to these songs, you don't think of how much necessarily is in there and the work that went into it on all these levels. And
yeah,
you
absolutely.
Guys do this like no one else.
Well, thank you.
Well, It's great being here again, Gary.
Absolutely. Yes. We're keep
always
having,
great to be here.
Going to keep having you back on. There will continue to be more top 10 hits.
Absolutely.
For you guys to deconstruct. So
we'll stay in tune.
Well, Yael, if you want to tell people again, Hit Songs Deconstructed, it's more than a website, but that's a good way to find out more about what you guys
do.
Yeah,
if you want to learn more about Hit Songs Deconstructed, you can go to www.hitsongsdeconstructed.com, and there you can learn about both the Hit Songs Deconstructed reports as well as our newly launched Immersion Searchable Database. And we hope you'll all check it out.
And maybe at 4 in the morning when you have time, you'll be speaking at a school somewhere in the future where we can find you there.
Or maybe playing music again. I should record it.
Thanks so much, guys, for coming back on the Charpy Podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.